lyrics are.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
These are...
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
This podcast is brought to you by FRP Games, an online retailer specializing in all kinds of gaming products. Please visit www.forplenetwork.com in order to gain access to thousands of unique items available only at FRP Games.
This is the Forple Network.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm here to tell you about CantCon. For those of us who can't con, there's CantCon. CantCon will be held at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center in Overland Park, Kansas, in the Capitol Federal Conference Room on July 9th through the 11th between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. There will be RPG events, board game events, card game events, miniatures, games, as well as open gaming tables for impromptu sessions. Pre-registration is open currently, and if you pre-register, you'll receive an additional chance to win swag at CantCon. We have over $2,500 worth of prizes to give away over the course of the convention, and we hope to give it all away. In addition, if you pre-register, you can get a 3-day pass for only $25. If you're only interested in coming one day at a time, you can for only $10 a day. There will be registration available at the door, but you'll have less of a chance to win free prizes that way. Join us at Johnson County Community College for CantCon on July 9th through the 11th, from beginning at 8 a.m. daily. Visit www.cantcon.com for more information. Well, this is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm sitting here with Mr. Chris Diaz. Is it Diaz or is that
it is Diaz.
Correct? Diaz, okay. From Deus Ex Machina or Machina?
Oh, yeah. No, you got it right the first time.
Deus Ex Machina Games.
Yeah. I really thought that pronunciation would be obvious. I'm surprised so many people had issues with it.
Oh, people ignore Latin all the time, you know, so... Yeah. I don't know if it, you know, I guess some people might look at it and wonder if you're trying to be clever. I don't know.
Well, the name came from my friend Cameron Louder. He was his idea, because I was against putting my name, but he thought, look, Deus Ex Machina, you have to name it that. It's, so, and then my co-writers and all gathered together and outvoted me.
So. Oh, that's democracy for you.
Yeah, exactly, unfortunately.
Well, the of course, I am talking to you on the heels of the release of the fourth edition game that you have put out for D&D 4th edition called Amethyst Foundations. That is just...
Yeah.
Now, it has hit the shelves now, hasn't it?
Most places, yeah. I'm surprised the fact that most of the places in Canada still haven't gotten their copies yet. My local town, for example, has not gotten any yet. They're still waiting for their shipment.
Oh, man.
So I have a lot of family members that are waiting.
Well, let's sort of go back a little bit and talk about you yourself for a minute. How did you first get into the gaming hobby? What got you to pick up the dice?
Being fat.
Being fat. Okay.
Well, yeah,
that is
basically
possibly the best answer I've gotten yet.
Yeah, well, it's true in so many ways. I mean, back in 1995, I lost 110 pounds. But before then, in grade four, I was 200 pounds. In grade four, I was 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So when you find every avenue to express yourself, and D&D was the easy way. And of course, like everyone else, if you're grade five or six and you're going into D&D, guaranteed you're going to screw up all the rules. So we had the basic red set, and we got everything wrong. And it wasn't until someone put AD&D in our hands that we started playing. And I played straight on through. I had a break in the mid 90s, and then I came back with 3.5. But I never embraced the D&D as much as all the peripheral games around D&D. I got popular, but never as popular as D&D. So it was a lot of West End Star Wars, and I was a big fan of Star Frontiers, which is where StraightOfDawn.com, my website, one of my websites, comes from, by the way. It comes from Star Frontiers.
I thought it sounded familiar, and that's actually a game system I had a copy of, but I never, ever, ever got a chance to play it.
Yeah. Yeah, Serena Dawn is the name of the space station in the module in the original Star Frontiers box set.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very few people catch that. And then
distant bell there. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's subtle. Like, I think four people have actually mentioned to me that they've actually caught that little reference. Anyway, I get back into 3.5, and Amethyst was the first and only game I've ever done for 3.5, and in a campaign. Stands and doing a large campaign arc. Amethyst was it, based on an idea I had from the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And it ran, and then we ended it after 2.5 years, and then everyone said, let's do another one. And then we just create new characters and start from level one, and we did it again for 2.5 years, and then we stopped it, and we just started a third one back in April, which is probably going to go on for another two and a half years. So
excellent.
You think I'll get tired of this by now, but my group of players are just they're slapping it out.
Excellent. Now, of course, Amethyst Foundations has just come out, and this is your first, according to your website, I believe this is your first published.
The first hard cut, like first in print, mass print.
In
I mean,
print,
we put out Amethyst 3.5 mm-hmm. on print on demand and PDF in 2008, 30 days before the release of 4th edition. So mm-hmm. that was awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. No, that was Anyway, but. You know, we picked ourselves off the floor and decided, well, since we're here, we might as well go fourth edition. So we did that.
That was actually going to be a question: is if you did you consciously decide to go use the D&D system, the fourth edition GSL, or and also 3.5 the OGL? Was that a conscious decision when you were developing Amethyst?
Well, Amethyst started off as just a concept, and it evolved over mm-hmm. 10 or 12 years. But the 3.5 was just the evolution. If you played a fantasy game, you just played D&D. That's how mm-hmm. what you did, because when they put out 3.5 as a universal system with the SRD and the OGL, that's what everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
So, but 4th edition was a conscious effort made by us because we wanted to make a place in the market, and to do something in 3.5 is difficult. Well, one thing, 3.5 was being retired,
mm-hmm.
although there was an evolution that some people have put out, like Pathfinder. You could still do that, but everything's been done for 3.5. There's been multiple science fiction and modern games, techno fantasies, and so forth. people have already broken that system and played with it. Good examples like Arcana Unearthed. I always get Arcana Unearthed and Unearthed Arcana confused.
Right.
I always, it's, you know, but it, Midnight, mm-hmm. right, which is another great system, which my group really loved. And we wanted to do that same thing, but we couldn't really do that with 3.5 because it's been done. But we're looking at 4th edition, and even after 2 years, a lot of people haven't tried to basically think outside the box. Some people have, but that's what we wanted to do. And after 2 years, people still haven't tried to create science fiction rules. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, to make it useful within the D&D setting, so you can still bring in your monsters and so forth into it. And so you can, it's our universe plus that universe, and we just put them together.
Sure. Why don't we talk real quick about the genesis of Amethyst and what Amethyst actually is?
Well, that's a good point, because that'll allow me to get into the conversation I was having with my friend Conan not too long ago regarding your podcast from last week. No, not last week, or the last podcast you posted, because you were having a conversation. I'm not sure, I can't remember the names of who was involved in the conversation, but you were mentioning what was it like, what the game... What the presentation of the game was, and mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if who was you. I don't think it was you. It was somebody else who immediately made up the one word which I have learned to hate in the last year, which was Shadowrun.
Oh, okay.
Right. Which we always get that, and I'm listening to your podcast and hear the word Shadowrun, and I just wanted to bury myself in the sand. I'm like, oh god, that's got to do this Shadowrun thing again.
I'm gonna say that was probably my co-host Jeremy.
Okay. Yeah, it was a guy. I knew he wasn't the primary recorder because his sound was a bit off. So I know he was piping himself in.
Okay, was probably Nathan.
Yeah. Okay. And he says Shadowrun, which everybody said when they read the blurb on Amethyst without diving into the setting, mm-hmm. they automatically assume it's doing Shadowrun,
right?
And then thankfully now that people have owned the game, there's actually more than just me and Conan going to websites and saying it's not Shadowrun. Mm-hmm. Now I have a whole bunch of people who bought the game who are going to websites and saying it's not Shadowrun. There's no cyberpunk. There is no merging of magic and technology. You can do that in Shadowrun. You can be an elf and wield technology. Although it can be difficult to wield both at the same time, mm-hmm. it is very easy to power crunch in Shadowrun to do that. Amethyst divides them both literally as well as philosophically within the setting. So the fact that you can't have both. You can't. Like, I was just watching Alice in Wonderland, right? Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she eats something, gets small, and, you know, dives into the hole and enters the end of Alice in Wonderland, and then she can just return. She just drinks the potion and just wakes up back in Wonderland. Harry Potter gets on his train and goes back and forth. You can't do that in Amethyst, and both worlds are occupying the same space. So if you don't want that fantasy world infringing on your technological world and breaking down your computers and your cable TV, you have to erect walls and protect yourself from them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's basically... That's where that conflict comes from. It's not a direct war, but you have people like you and me. I mean, I actually work with somebody who's like 6.5 feet tall, about 240 pounds, with a goatee that goes down to his belly button practically. And he says, oh, I can go into a fantasy world, no problem. And in his case, I can believe him. But when I ask people who play MMORPGs, like World of Warcraft and so forth, and mm-hmm. and who live in and out of fantasy worlds a lot through reading books, watching movies, and playing these games, you ask them, would you want to go out there? And knowing the fact you couldn't come back, most mm-hmm. of them are like, well, actually, no, I don't think I could. So that's basically what Amethyst really is. It's forcing people to look at the anachronisms of that setting mm-hmm. and having to make that conscious decision. That's why it's not... of setting, like one person had criticized way back in 2008, that humans and technology were presented as the stooges of the setting, and it's actually completely not true. It has absolutely nothing. It's not that. It's not black and white. The entire book is shades of gray.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that sounds pretty cool. Why don't you give us the rundown of what Amethyst is then? What sort of the selling point on what Amethyst is?
Well, beyond the what I just said about the, mm-hmm. I always try to sell the setting first before the crunch, because the setting is what I do. Sure. So the setting about being able to play either fantasy characters having to cross swords, mm-hmm. to coin a phrase, with these technological people that are trying to either infringe in your world or try to if they're really fanatic, to destroy a world in order to preserve their own. You could also be a technological, a person from a technological world that sees this real world, real Earth with real science, our modern world, suddenly get pushed down into being a primitive society by this magical world, which never changes, never evolved, because magic stifles in ingenuity, mm-hmm. right? Why bother building a new building or a new car when you can just cast a spell and teleport? Magic never gets better, but technology does. So if you're part of this technological side, you want your planet back for your own. So you, at that point, you want to be able to put man back in charge. So you have that goal. But of course, there's also the third one is there a room on this planet for both to live peacefully? But right now, that's not possible because there's too many fanatics on either side. It's very much a parable to our own world of religion and people that think religion is corrupting. That same type of conversation occurs in Amethyst as well. Those religious conversations about chaos and order, as well as these two worlds. Then, of course, on top of that, we're, of course, introducing this crunch point of presenting science fiction classes and technology into fourth edition, mm-hmm. basically giving you about 100+ weapons, wet armor from a basic Kevlar to powered armor and mecha. And then, of course, we have four Tekken classes, which use these firearms and operate in their own little world. They're designed to enmesh with each other. So as a result, if you take one of them out and you put them into a fantasy group, they work differently. They don't fall into that hard line role of defender, controller, or striker. They operate a little differently. So it presents a setting and also presents that pseudo modern rule system, which currently doesn't exist for fourth edition.
Mm-hmm. Did you find any challenges when you were turning Amethyst into basically putting Amethyst into the fourth edition mindset?
Well, amazingly enough, with the stipulations of the GSL, mm-hmm. which limits what you can do, I mean, they define something and you can't redefine it. You can add a definition to it, but I couldn't change something. I couldn't, like, when you have a world that has real religion, right. You can't prove, you can't verify God's existence. Therefore, you couldn't have a cleric. Mm-hmm. In the setting, because the cleric still defines himself from his belief, he gets his power from God. But since I didn't want to verify to say which God is real, and I couldn't make them all real, mm-hmm. I had to say, well, no clerics can go in this game unless you do something in your own homebrew campaign to make that happen.
Right.
But most of the time, the GSL was actually liberating, because it allowed us to force us to creating something original. So instead of just saying, oh yeah, I'll just use Tieflings, we can just say, look, no, we're going to create our own races for this setting. We can create our own monsters. We have our own three dragons, evil dragons. We have our own elves and dwarves. We have our own variations that match what we wanted our elves and our dwarves to be like, right? And that's basically how our setting works.
Right.
So that was actually liberating. The powers and the rules were very difficult because even WotC's publications have changed. If you go to Player's Handbook 1, 2, and 3, they've changed some of their design ideas. Mm-hmm. And going into Player's Handbook 3, we've noted that some of the new classes almost seem more powerful, which I thought was very unusual. Mm-hmm. And I also noticed that, of course, they put out not one, not two, but three erratas in the last 2 years.
Right.
So we've had to adapt as well. So we wrote the first book in 2008. And we had to go back in January and then redo a lot of powers again, mm-hmm. because this learning more about the setting, learning more about the crunch and the rules, we had to go back and change things. Mm-hmm. So that was difficult. It was way more difficult than I expected to make all this wording fit together.
Right.
And I know that some people have expressed some dissatisfaction over the fact that our Tekken classes don't follow that defined role of striker, controller, you know, leader, defender, and all that.
Sure.
But that was just basically our way of thinking outside the box and saying, look, these four classes work perfectly together in one group. But if you take the grounder out of the Tekken group, you put him into a fantasy group, he doesn't operate like a defender. So he becomes more like a controller. Right. But when in the group, he operates as both. So that's something we were trying to do. But like I said, it was a difficult process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I'm looking at this, I've got the book in my hands right now, actually. I'm looking through it. Cool. The first of all, the book is gorgeous. It's a hardcover, black and white interior, and great price point on it, I think. So.
Oh yeah.
You have a few new classes in here, and you were just mentioning it. I do notice that pretty much all of them, if not all of them, as I'm flipping through here, are dual roles. There's like leader, striker, you know, defender, striker, that sort of thing.
The stalker is supposed to be a striker controller, not a defender control. I'm not sure how that's up to do, but all the other ones are dual. So yeah, the grounder is a defender controller, mm-hmm. a defender leader, for example. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Okay, excellent. And you did that basically, and there are how many classes are in the book then?
There are four classes, and they have dual builds, just like the fourth edition, but the dual builds changes your role. Mm-hmm. So if you are going towards to be more a defender, you pick these one-on-one combat abilities, these abilities that mark targets, these abilities that impede the target's capacity of approaching other allies but yourself. Mm-hmm. If, however, you choose the area effect powers, you become a controller. Right, so these area effect powers, so the grounder can lay down area effects that will mobilize and disrupt enemy units. And the same thing with Stalker. Stalker's got two builds. One is a sniper, right, which makes him a controller because the sniper is able to impose status effects with his sniper powers. While the dual pistol wielding Stalker is very much a striker because he moves very quickly, like a rogue, and attacks targets multiple times and does a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the operator. He's a striker leader because he can be a healer or a mechanic. As a mechanic, he can modify his weapons to be more powerful. As a healer, obviously, he does healing stuff, which makes him more a leader. Marshall, same thing. He's a defender leader because he can move enemies, and he can also mark targets as well.
Sure. Now, how did you integrate technology into the 4th edition rule set?
Well, it was initially a lot more difficult. Then we realized we were being idiots and realized we could just create... Well, in the old game, we had tech levels. Mm-hmm. And we only had tech levels to denote where these technologies come from. So if a bastion, which is these Tekken cities... Like Angel's tech level 2, so it's limited to basic firearms, some advanced firearms, but nothing really advanced like a railgun, a gyroc, lasers, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. When we were working on Anvil's 4th edition, we realized that tech levels could also equate enhancement levels. Mm-hmm. So tech levels 0 through 3 were basic firearms in levels of complexity to your basic primitive revolvers, to more powerful caseless ammunition weapons.
Right.
And then on top of that, we had railguns. The railguns were enhancement level 3 to 6, and these had their own effects. And so we built them exactly like magic weapons, mm-hmm. right? They had, but some of them have minimum levels, right? You can't buy a railgun at first level. You right. can only buy one at third or fourth level when you get into plus 4 weapons. And some weapons like the plasma weapons, they're only available at tech level 5, so they are only available at enhancement levels plus 5 and plus 6. Mm-hmm. And like all magic weapons, they have additional features, they have critical effects. The railgun can shoot through a target and attack someone else. Plasmas can ignite the people on fire. Laser can blind someone. And the various other things. Shotguns, of course, can knock someone prone if you critical success or knock sure. them back and stuff like that. So we built them exactly like magic weapons. In fact, as some people have noted, it was such an easy thing to write. It's almost stupid, the fact that how easy it was to make these. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, to appease people who wanted to homebrew their own game and have plus 1 to plus 6 basic firearms or be able to use plasma weapons at plus 1, we threw in a 2-page chapter at the end which allows you to alter the rules to convert it to your own homebrew game. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to, say, have a magic Old West setup when everyone's just using revolvers. Stuff like that. So we threw that in basically at the 11th hour. The last second, we threw in a chapter so people could adapt the game to their own needs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, guns. Armor was a lot more difficult than guns because armor had to do two roles. They had to be armor, and they had to be the other magic items that people pick up along the way. Like a power armor didn't make sense. It's just giving you an armor bonus. So a power armor is armor plus a belt plus a ring. Because it does all of these things. So if you actually look at the entry for armor, it's actually got three different levels because it actually counts for three different items. So if you buy, so if you create a character at 25th level and you want to have a, an Apostle Motor Slave, which is a, this big power armor, mm-hmm. you don't really get to have a lot else. You get that and you get your gun, and that's basically it because you've used right. up all your money. So
excellent. Now, why don't we talk a little bit about the actual setting, the setting in Amethyst and whatnot? Why did you choose to, and for the benefit, just for the benefit of our listeners, why did you choose to basically set it on Earth?
I don't know. I had this weird condition. I like all my stories, all my settings to be realistic, and not necessarily gritty realistic, but. There's something a bit more tangible in a setting if it's completely, like, if I can believe it 100%, right? It's like when I'm watching science fiction stories and you want to be hard science fiction, then you can't let that pseudo science fiction get through. Mm-hmm. So when I was doing Amethyst, it was just an obvious thing for me to do, to sit in the real world. But sitting in the real world forced me to acknowledge all the anachronisms of and all the strange kind of things we kind of take for granted, right? Like, if we had a real fantasy world, you couldn't have all these monsters, or else you'd have everyone would be dead. You couldn't have everyone waving a wand, or else you'd have anarchy. So we'd have to try to apply a real, realistic eye to a fantasy world. And because we're sitting in the modern world, I have to acknowledge our own history as well as and learning from the patterns of history. If there was a new race of elves that have entered our world and had taken a control of a section of land, how would we react to them? I mean, we see how people react to just different types of humans. How would we react to completely non-humans? How would we react to people that use magic, and this magic broke down your conveniences? Like, this guy enters with a magic wand, and suddenly your washing machine doesn't work. How are you going to act and respond to that person? Will there be racism? Will there be, you know, biases, prejudices? Will that be involved? And if you're in a fantasy, in a real world, suddenly you can't use God as your scapegoat, right? Because we can't acknowledge God's existence in a real world, because that's against what we know of the real world, right? God is about faith. It's not about about fact. And in fantasy worlds, gods are all fact, because you need that God to explain how the fantasy world happens, because that's your mythology. So Amethyst had to be created realistically, and everything had to make sense, right? And that was a pain. Yeah, that was unusual, because suddenly I had to research all this stuff that I didn't know. You know, I had to go in and talk about the biology of Fae and how it breaks certain rules. But then we also had to try to explain how these things could happen. Which is, like, I remember having a conversation with my co-writer and partner, Conan, and I was saying the fact that realistically you couldn't have half-breeds, you know, half-elf, half-human, because they wouldn't be biologically compatible. So he said, well, then say that they can't breed. Say half-elves aren't in the setting. And I thought, no, but that's a classic fantasy cliche. We got to have that. So I ended up having to do this massive two-page explanation of romance that's in the book that explains why and how these two types of races can mingle. So it actually became game crunch. It actually became rules. There's actually a bonding rule system in the book for marrying a human marrying an elf, or vice versa,
right.
And the rules that come along from that. So it's kind of weird. And of course, the disruption rules came from the exact same process, because we were running the game back in 2002, and we realized that. It was the same setting, it just didn't have disruption. Magic technology were separated, but there was no real reason other than the fact that they were separated. Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out why in the world people would just start wielding weapons. There had to be a reason why people outside didn't automatically produce something, right? And that was the reason why I realized that there had to be something that prevented technology from progressing. Right. Because the fantasy world, like Game of Thrones, is a world that's several thousand years old, and no one ever builds a car, right? There's got to be a reason for that, so the disruption rules were put in place. There's crunch to reflect that as well, but like all the other kind of new rules we put in, like the disruption rules I'd suggest to people, look, don't enforce them unless your Tekken group is being stupid and they're like, you know, trying to put on a magic ring or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you're supposed to enforce that division, and if they're careful, you shouldn't punish them for it. But that's how these crunch rules and these settings come about, because I'm trying to apply a realistic look to this setting.
Mm-hmm. Remember, that was your ultimate impetus for putting it for setting it on Earth.
Because I want it to be realistic, and setting on Earth is a very easy way of doing that. But I don't know why I made the conscious decision. It just happened that way naturally.
Just happened that way. Cool. What kind of did you find any other challenges while you were developing this game? Because it sounds like you've had this in development for quite some time. I mean, originated back on your old original website. Is that right?
Yeah, I originally had it on SerenaDawn.com, but back then it was just dragons.
Sure.
And in our technological world, and this was back in 1995. Then I saw the film Reign of Fire. Mm-hmm. I got really angry. Hell with this! I threw it away and I forgot about it. And then someone wanted to do a game, and I dusted it off, and then I changed it to incorporate more fantasy elements, and it went on from there. So. Basically, yeah.
All right. Now, with the release here of Amethyst Foundations, is there anything else on the horizon that you can tell us about for Amethyst?
Well, I know that we had to take certain things out of the book, mm-hmm. because for space and budget, and because we had awesome artwork and I wanted to give it more space, and Epic Destinies had to get removed. Foundation spells, which are connected to Epic Destinies, they were removed. A few Paragon paths were removed, two races, a handful of monsters, mm-hmm. and a few things. Level Up issue 3 from Goodman Games is going to have a new race, new life paths, and a new monster connected to the race. Mm-hmm. And if you get that issue, you can see that missing race, because they're mentioned a couple times in the main book, but you don't actually ever see them. They're in Level Up number 3. And there are a few other things we also want to do. We're talking about a fifth Tekken class. So we're working on that. I can't give a date yet, because it'll depend entirely on the success of Amethyst. And that's my initial goal, is that, which will open up the world to South America. And then obviously if we do more books, we'll open up another section, because the entire world is done. Mm-hmm. This has been fortified, basically defined many, many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm. Just basically hunting around on your website and whatnot, I have a few questions. You've got another game listed on here called Neurospasta.
Yep.
What can you tell me about that?
Beyond the fact that I love the name, just take that. I've been made fun of so many times. Yes, I know about the zombie pasta joke. Everyone's made it. If my friends made it before everyone else made it, so when people make the zombie pasta joke, just let you know that we thought of that joke before you did. Neurospasta, for the people who don't know, is a marionette term, a puppeteering term. It's Greek for pulling strings. Mm-hmm. And I like the name Neuro. And so I thought that was interesting. I originally had it as a monster attack, mm-hmm. and I thought that's kind of neat. And when I was developing a cyberpunk game, I just moved that title over because I thought it made sense. And Neurospasta takes the foundation, oddly enough, of Amethyst Foundation, the foundation of the character classes, the combat rules, explosive rules, vehicle rules, the way the firearms work, and going further. Taking it out of fantasy and creating a pure universal fourth edition modern / science fiction rule set. So that one, some people have problems with us breaking a design philosophy of fourth edition. I have no idea what people are going to think about Neurospasta, because Neurospasta does away with splits classes up. So classes are only half built. You only get two or three powers per level, level adjustment there, and when you also get ladders, and ladders are both magic items and additional racial abilities, and all c- compiled into this pseudo class that you choose at first level. Mm-hmm. So you choose your race, which defines what you are. You select a life path, which tells you where you came from. And then you choose a ladder, and the ladder defines what you became. And then class is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then the life paths are based on your primary attribute, charisma, dex, int, strength, con, and there's six of them. You pick one of those, and that not only alters the class, but also gives you unique abilities specifically to that ladder. So if you're a runner, which is a dex int build, mm-hmm. all the powers about moving fast, agility, and speed, and so forth. And therefore, if you go into runner, into a soldier class, then you're an agile soldier, mm-hmm. and you use dex for your ranged attack rolls. If, however, you're a juggernaut, which is con strength, you use constitution for all your attack rolls, for melee and ranged attacks, which means if you go into the same soldier class, everything's different. You have a whole bunch of other powers which are completely unique to you, despite the fact that you're still the same soldier class as the runner. But you have a whole different batch of abilities. Not only that, when you achieve a level where you can choose a power, you can choose a power from your class or from the ladder. And the ladder is usually a smaller pool than the class. Mm-hmm. And you can choose that, which means by the time you get to the 30th level, you could have a completely different character. And your role changes as well, because certain ladders are better suited for certain some ladders are better suited with certain classes. And you'd be surprised the strange combinations that my playtesters have found and realize how powerful. Veteran, for example, which is a wisdom charisma build, is an extremely powerful soldier class. You would think it would be the guy who's all strength and all con, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, it's also a cyberpunk setting. We created an original setting to go along with it, mm-hmm. that inspired by this new generation of cyberpunk films and books that have come out in the last 10 or 15 years. Not the classic 80s or even early 90s cyberpunk, mm-hmm. but the recent ones that are out of France and out of Japan, namely Appleseed and Ghost in the Shell and so forth. I know Ghost in the Shell is back from the 90s and 80s, but if you look at the modern interpretations of Ghost in the Shell, it's not as much punk, which is the reason why Neurospasm is not really cyberpunk, because there's not much punk. It's a political espionage, so it's a bit of a spy thriller merged in with cyberpunk, and then also an action story as well. So it's this very kind of it's a very convoluted setting set in this future headquarters of the United Nations, mm-hmm. and you're set in this city, which is basically the UN to the nth degree, and you're basically trying to protect it or try to destroy it, depending on the classes you make. Mm-hmm. But underneath that veil of that setting is this extremely complicated but universal 4th edition modern system that we're currently testing. We've been testing it for a year and a half. So that potential is going to depend on the success of Amethyst.
Cool.
Because, like I said, we threw all of our peas into Amethyst. So well, it'll depend on...
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about Amethyst that I haven't touched on?
Well, like I said, since it came out, we've received a lot of praise, a lot of good reviews, mm-hmm. and I know that Conan and I, we've been watching the feedback coming in, and people are very enthusiastic, and they want it to be the best that it can be, and I'm really surprised at the support about the project. But I was surprised at this push for the 4th edition design philosophy, which surprised us, because we just came off of 3.5, and 3.5 games, especially the later ones, like Midnight, didn't follow a 3.5 design philosophy. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised that people are having problems, the fact that we didn't necessarily want to follow the letter of the law, a 4th edition design philosophy.
Right.
Our loyalty was to the setting and not necessarily to the crunch. So when we addressed the crunch, we wanted the crunch to fit into the setting, not vice versa. So that was a big surprise. But I'm working with a lot of people in trying to make them feel better about some of the rules that we've decided to introduce. Mm-hmm. But I'm really quite impressed. A lot of praise on the artwork. The artwork's fantastic.
Yeah, the book is beautiful. I mean, black and white interior, people immediately, it's only black and white, but this is gorgeous.
I'm really hoping people don't take that kind of stigma of black and white to heart, because I mean, I know a lot of the old school gamers in my age bracket, because unfortunately I know how old you are now because of our conversation about the TV shows we used to watch, that we can appreciate black and white artwork, and some people say that that's old school, it's classic. But a lot of people, you know, just like, well, no, it's color or not. And as such, it was hard to find an artist that would do black and white for us.
Yeah.
So many of them just didn't want to bother. So, and then on top of that, to find probably the best black and white artist on the planet was just, it was just too good to be true. So, So it's interesting that the people who read the book automatically think Shadowrun. It's still shocking to me.
Yeah, no, you know, basically you say, you know, technology and magic, and a lot of people are going to immediately jump to that.
Well, the Arcanum one, people mentioned Arcanum, and I can understand Arcanum. I never played Arcanum. I never heard of Arcanum until someone mentioned it, and it was a computer game made, I think, in the late 90s that dealt with disruption. Arcanum was a fantasy world where... they had technology and fantasy, and they were breaking each other down, but it was set in a fictional fantasy world, and you could still be an elf and use technology and so forth. And it dealt with the encroachment of technology in a fantasy world. This is the encroachment of a fantasy into a technological world.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of other issues there. So I didn't mind the comparisons to that. I'm still surprised people don't bring up Avatar.
Yeah.
Right? No one ever brings up Avatar, despite the fact that people who know the game knows that our game predates Avatar.
Sure.
But there's lots of that. I mean, I remember watching Avatar and go, well, you know, if you change the Navi to Chaperon, you effectively have Amethyst, right? The fantasy world is pretty freaky, and you have these guys in technology in power suits basically doing exactly what these guys are doing.
Right.
So, you know, there's no Avatar, mind you. There's no, the hook of the story isn't in there, but the basis of the setting is actually pretty solid.
But of course, the magic in Amethyst is a bit more overt than it is in Avatar.
Oh yeah, the big thing with Avatar is like visually, the presentations are similar. But the big thing, and one thing I actually mentioned to people, which I actually think is quite humorous, I say, do you think Jake Sully missed flush toilets when he was wiping with available leaves in the forest of Pandora? Because that's the thing about when we create these fantasy worlds, we don't take for granted the little nuances that are never dealt with. I mean, you think about it. I mean, look what this guy did. This goofball decided that he was going to basically screw his entire home world, who apparently needed this mineral to survive. And they went and betrayed them, and in order to protect his girlfriend. And he never really thinks about the fact how much he's giving up. He's giving up all of that, all those conveniences. But in his opinion, it's not worth it, because the Navi are, you know, look at us, we're Navi, we're giant, we're blue-skinned, and we're apparently indestructible.
Right.
Why wouldn't you, you know, all of his dreams come true in the end. Well, in the fiction that's written around Amethyst, it's all about the cold reality of the situation. You know, you go out in that world and you get your ass kicked, and you end up crawling back behind your walls, and you realize, and yeah, no, it kind of sucks out there, unless you actually want to be part of that world, or in case of some people, you are forced to be part of that world because you are part of it. So, I mean, imagine if we were in Amethyst, you and me talking about it, what would we believe? Would we go, no, they should live. They should have their own lives. They should have their all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or knowing the fact that our world of technology is slowly dying, would we hate them? Would we want and wish and obsess about their destruction in order to put Earth back into the hands of man? Who's more right, right? If you and I can't necessarily make that decision, that tells you that it is a gray zone. It's not black and white, good or evil.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you can do in Amethyst is play, is really, it's the one side or the other type of thing, is technology or magic, right? So.
Oh, yeah. No, please note, you can completely ignore the entire philosophical elements of the story, the ethical elements of the story. You can grab a gun, make some Tekken characters, and blow some shit up.
Excellent.
I'm sorry, shouldn't have cursed.
Oh, no, you're fine.
All right, cool. Yeah, I know. Just blow some shit up. Let's take some machine guns and walk into a dungeon that's designed for a bunch of by a cleric and a fighter, and shoot some guns, and see if there's a, see if the goblins react any differently when you fire a hunk of lead at half, you know, at the speed of sound into their cranium. Well, they won't be thinking much, actually, but you know.
Well, that will be the last thing going through their head, really.
Yeah. Other than the bullet.
Yes.
I know my game. My game is much all about story. In fact, when I do a dungeon crawl, my group actually objects, and they want to get back into the story, into the game. But so a lot of people like dungeon crawls, and a lot of people you can just grab a dungeon, swap out monsters, or even not swap out monsters, throw your Tekken characters into it, and see how they handle. Mm-hmm. We've done that many times. In fact, we did our own Tekken podcast, which is still available on our website. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be educational, and it wasn't educational because my players are insane.
And that website is dsxmachina.com, right?
Yeah. My players are certifiably insane. Conan, for example, I'm not entirely sure what strange types of creatures breeded to create him, but he's kind of like John Goodman on speed. I don't know exactly what the situation with him is. It's just, but he's my core writer, and he's the reason why I'm slightly unbalanced. He created all the monsters, by the way. So if you have any issues, if you have any issues about the monsters, like the fact that we have a monster that sucks out your healing surges, you can blame him.
Okay.
He's very proud of that. He's very proud of the fact that he has powers called meaty fists.
The monsters are all pretty cool. Sort of a definite mix of technology and magic, and I sort of akin it to Warhammer 40K on acid. So.
Oh well, no, he's a big fan of 40K, I can only imagine what would happen if he took acid. That's him. That's him normal. By the way, I mean he looked at the I created the creature of the bog of having this giant mouth, and his idea was to create a bog mother, which was just a giant fat woman with a huge mouth. He would create a giant fat woman that attacks you. I don't know if that leads to him having some issues that we have to discuss.
Yep.
I don't know. I have to talk to him about that.
Excellent. Now, are you guys planning on being at any conventions coming up, or are we possibly?
Well, I'm still whoring myself to see if I can get some nominations for the Annies. I'm not sure. I remember when the 3.5 analysis came out, we got an honorable mention. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to get some recognition. If we get recognized, I will try to make an effort to get to Gen Con.
That would be awesome.
But being where I am right now, it is quite expensive to get all the way to to that part of the world. So. I'm going to really try, and I hope I'm given reason to come. So, I mean, just nomination would be enough just to go there as an excuse.
I believe
to
the nominations are being announced on July 9th, which is the first day.
Which is my birthday!
It's also the first day of CantCon.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah! So you guys got you guys got your book then, right?
Yes, we did. That's what I've been flipping through, actually, and looking at. So
don't bend it now.
I won't. I'll just look at it longingly. and again, poking around on your website, I was looking around, and first of all, do you really look like Matthew Perry?
I don't. I really wish people would stop saying that I do. I don't. For example, well, since that post made, I have lost almost all my hair, and I shaved off the rest of it. I also have the eyebrows of Martin Scorsese, and I don't know entirely sure if that's an attractive feature or not. And like I said, it's just I'm kind of gangly, really. I'm not entirely sure what that is, but my group is populated by extremely eccentric people. And if you listen to the Tekken podcast, you'll see how kind of utterly insane. And if you're, you know, some people say all game groups are like that. I really don't think that is. I think my group is unique in their psychosis.
Nice.
So, and I think. Only a deranged man. It should be noted, by the way, I am probably the dumbest person in the group. I am, because I think two of my players got bachelor's degrees in psychology, and one of them has an IQ of 168. So just know the fact that I'm the dumbest among them as a result of that. So they make me better, and they make Amethyst better, because I have to raise the bar in order to compete with that.
Excellent. Well, looking at wrapping things up here, I have a few questions that I generally ask everybody. First being, and I sort of already asked this, but is there anything on the horizon that you're excited about, or that we should be excited about that you've got coming out, or that is coming out that you're excited about? Really, can be anything.
Well, I don't know. Did you see that teaser trailer for Game of Thrones today?
Oh gosh, yes, I saw that. I was talking to Chris Primus last night, and he told me about it, and I was like, ooh.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that series. Didn't show you Jack, but man, that's nice. But
It sure made me excited to see it.
Well, yeah, it's definitely something that our group has been watching for a long time. But for my end, we're working with a whole bunch of people right now to try to address certain issues to see if we can make Amethyst more attractive to the people who really want Amethyst to follow the fourth edition design philosophy. Uh-huh. So if we can come out and appease their concerns, then that's great. In fact, I actually went seeking out our loudest critics, the ones that like the game but felt it broke certain rules about how to produce a fourth edition game. And we brought them in and covered their mouths. No, we brought them in and basically asked them to tell us what their concerns was. And then we wrote them down and we showed them, okay, would this help? And they said, yeah, that would actually fix it just fine. So in order to try to help people to make the game more universal to what they want. So there's that. There's the second book, which I'd like to give out a date of when, but I really have no idea. Because we produced the book, but it's published through Goodman Games, so it's going to be really their decision on when that's going to come out. Hopefully, if Amethyst does sell well, and every indication saying it is, then we should produce a second book forthright. I know that we'll want to put out a second book before we pursue Nuris Basta, only because Nuris Basta it requires a lot of effort to get right. And I mean, we've gone through two batches of playtesters, and we circulated two updates, and we're doing a third, only because it's such a complicated system to get right by creating a universal system like that creates a role playing game instead of creating a combat game, because three of the classes in Amethyst and Nuris Basta don't have attack powers, right? So that gives you an indication of how much we're breaking kind of the philosophy of it is these kind of concepts. Sure. And hacking. And of course, we have hackers, of course, being a cyberpunk game. And that's proving to be just a colossal pain in the ass.
No,
because it's just, yeah, because you can't just have a whole bunch of attack powers to cause damage. So we have to do all these powers that do various effects. And so that's been difficult. But I have a great, great batch of playtesters. I got one playtester that helped me work on explosive rules, and he works for the explosive ordnance demolition department division at the Department of Defense.
Right.
So, you know the fact that we got that right, or as right as you can make it within fourth edition. So, like that's that attention to detail that I was saying earlier, when we did Nuris Basta, and we knew we were going to have it related to the United Nations. And as we said in the city, which was the headquarters of the United Nations, we got contacted and we actually got a technical advisor who is a UN lawyer. Right? So it's that kind of level of detail that we're always insisting on. So
very cool.
Beyond that, I would love to keep on going. I would love to produce like another bloody like four or five games, all the stuff that no one else touched on. I'd love to do a space horror.
Mm-hmm.
Space horror, not space horror. That's a different thing.
That would be awkward, yeah.
I'm sure it would sell. Space horror. I'm sure Conan would love to write that one. Anyway,
I'm sure he's
that.
Already, from what you've told me, I'm sure he's already writing it right now.
I think he's actually writing notes down as we speak. and I think I would love to do a superhero story, which I'm not sure anyone's really played with yet. I'd love to do a superhero game, you know. But I'd like to base it off. I like the ladder system that we're developing for Nuris Basta to be the launching point for a variety of other games using that same system, right? So the fact that this base system, we can just take that universal rules, pluck it into these other non-fantasy games we want to do, and then create a new setting using that same basic system without having to rewrite all new rules over and over, right?
Sure.
So that's what I would love to do if you're looking that far in the future, when cars fly.
Hey, flying cars do exist. They're just ridiculously expensive.
And they're psychotic.
Yes, there is.
No one would ever fly a car. Considering how many people die in cars to let them fly, honestly, that's removing a lot of people from the population.
Well, all I got to say is they've got 5 years to live up to Back to the Future 2, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, someone made a hoverboard.
Yeah. Snowboards and tomato hoverboard.
Yeah, that's awesome. really? No. I would trade in my hoverboard and my flying car for a mecha. Honestly, the Japanese really they have to really pony up because they've been promising mecha since 1980, uh-huh. and they really have to come through because I you know, come on guys, go live it up. And or sex robots. We got to have some sex robots.
Oh, they're working on them, I'm sure.
I know. Right now, all the you see these robots that are in these conventions, and they're just creepy. They're just weird.
Yeah, like, ooh. So,
yeah, they're just bizarre things. But, you know, God knows, I love the Japanese for that. I love the fact that they love just, you know, nobody in America would ever design a mecha. Someone in Japan is going to build a mecha sometime. They're never going to be able to use it, but they'll find some way to use it somehow. They'll just have it. It'll be directing traffic, but they'll have a robot.
Of course.
just because they can. But that's why I love that place. But yeah.
When was the last time that you had a chance to roll some dice or play anything or run anything?
Oh, well, like I said, we did a 2.5 year campaign of Amethyst in 2002, and then we did another one in 2006, 2007, and we had like a six month break, and we jumped right back into it again. We started a third Amethyst campaign with first level characters mm-hmm. in April. And each one lasted about 2.5 years. So here I am doing it again, right? My game is quite further advanced than what people are playing. Like people, sure. The Fabulous Foundations, it's basically, if you can see how large this universe is, Amethyst Foundations, the book you buy, encompasses only the first season of the first game. Mm-hmm. And there are four seasons for each game, and I've made three games. So you can take that into consideration how big the universe actually is. There's so much stuff that we haven't dealt with. Please know the 3.5 game, which is 400 some pages, mm-hmm. that had more. That had the first two seasons built in. So a lot of people who bought that 3.5 were going, hey, where's all this cool stuff? Where are these monsters and these characters and this race and this faction? And I went, don't tell anyone that. That's a secret. And they're like, okay. That's second book. The second book will be season two. And we'll probably produce, you know, if we follow that kind of pattern, two more books for Amethyst, and then we'll produce another new core book, which will be set some years later in the next chapter of Amethyst. So, whole thing. I have a whole thing in mind, and that isn't that the epitaph of a game of a book writer? I have 15 books planned out, and then he writes two books and says, "I'm done." You know, so that people will look back in this podcast and go, "Oh, that silly old fool! If only he knew! If only he knew how crazy it was."
Yes.
It's like when you make a movie, and it's the starting of a franchise. We're gonna make like 15 of these things, and it fails. It's like, any film that leads into a sequel automatically fails, just automatically, like Starship Troopers. Like, now we're moving into movie two, and we're done. Or Golden Compass. You're like, wait, it's over? What happened to the rest of the book? That's the second movie.
Exactly.
You mean the second movie? The second movie that's never gonna get made? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So.
All right. Now, last question I have really is the one thing that Gamers Haven is really all about is spreading the love of the hobby and spreading the love of tabletop gaming. What is it that keeps you coming back to the hobby? What is it that you love about tabletop gaming?
I am the center of attention because I have no confidence. I live in a basement suite. I don't even have an animal because when I had an animal, he rejected me. No, seriously, it is very much, it's a social atmosphere. I don't play MMORPGs. I don't actually care for them because I have an addictive personality, which explains why I was fat for my youth. So I know if I get into a game like WoW, I'll never stop,
sure.
You know? I was just playing Borderlands, and I blew through the entire game in 18 hours over 3 days
mm-hmm.
because I'm an idiot, and I can't pull away. So I have an addicting personality. I like being around people. I like having that social atmosphere. And an RPG is a way for me to do that, to write this game out and give my friends a reason to come over, because if you don't give them a reason, they won't, because, you know, honestly, all I have beyond that is food. So, because they do the Warhammer thing, and I don't do that anymore. And they do War Machine. I don't really do that anymore. And they have wives, and I apparently don't do that anymore either. So.
All right. Well, Amethyst Foundations is out now. Hopefully at your local game store. If not, you can get it at. I'm assuming you can get it at RPG Now and get it.
Yeah, BDF is on RPG Now. Some places in Canada are still waiting, but most of the places in the state should have them. So if you want your local game store, get them to order it. Goodman is really, one of the many things I agree about Goodman's philosophy is the support of local game stores. And I've seen some game stores, like New Moon Comics, I think in New Jersey, they're like, awesome guys, awesome. Like massive supporting, like some of these game stores are just, they are so enthusiastic about the product. And they've been just too kind in their support. So yeah, go to your local game store and tell them you want to get Amethyst. Tell them to go through your supplier and order it in, because that's money in my pocket, money in Goodman's pocket, and my money goes into the next book.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to me about Amethyst.
And I have to get back into Borderlands.
Oh yeah, exactly. I actually have that game. I've had that game since December and haven't actually played it yet. So
not possible with me. Not possible.
I know.
I finished Modern Warfare 2 in the first night.
Oh, man.
That's what I'm talking. I just, you know, can't do anything. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. Well, thanks for being on the show, and thanks for Amethyst, actually. Amethyst is very cool.
Thanks, man. Spread the word.
Will do.
Okay, Carol, now you take these notes, and then we're about ready to begin.
Okay, sure.
Well, what are you two doing here? We don't record until tomorrow.
We're making a new promo for All Games Considered, since you were dragging your feet getting one written.
Hey.
She's right, though. It's been too long, and a lot has happened since the last promo.
Yeah, like winning the Gold Ennie for Best Gaming Podcast for 2009.
You mean the one you try to work into the conversation every other episode?
Hey.
Now, there's more than that. There's the new format.
You mean the main show every 2 weeks and the assortment of other features in the meantime?
Right, like games you may never have heard of, the review and new shows.
Don't forget the RPG buffet.
And on the main show, we have more time to focus on gaming topics.
Like board and card games.
And RPGs.
And the people who play them, from the old school to the newest of the new.
But no changeling. Hey!
Find out more at agcpodcast.info. All games considered, because there's more than one true way to play.
Been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.